PTF here, a couple of notes before we start the show. Thursday afternoon, we've got another $179 Breeders' Cup qualifier. We're going to be live streaming the whole thing this time. Join us. Contest starts with race 5 at Keeneland at 3:08. And from there, it's 4 from Keeneland, 4 from Belmont Park. We'll be on air basically from 3 to 5. Me and Matt Bernier, should be a ton of fun. And of course, as with all our Horse Player Happy Hour contests, House Cut goes to charity. So this is a great, easy, fun way to support our friends at the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Go to horseplayers.com to find more information. Look for the game and sign up today. That URL once again, horseplayers.com. Another reminder that we have a lot of extra coverage for Keeneland for In the Money Plus. Sign up today, get all the rest of our Keeneland coverage. We're going to have an extra show for Sunday, extra written content for Saturday from Eric Solomon and Michael Domable. Check out their free stuff as well at inthemoneypodcast.com. But you don't want to miss all the information. And to ensure that you do not miss it, you're going to want to sign up for In the Money Plus. You'll also get all of our Breeders' Cup content. We've got some really fun things planned for this year, very much along the lines of what we did last year, maybe even a little bit more. Maybe an extra podcast or two, some extra European coverage, some extra stuff on ticket construction. Sign up for In the Money Plus today. For more info, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. That's inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. Hello and welcome to a special edition of the In the Money podcast. I've been threatening this show for a while. Today it becomes a reality. It's going to drop on Wednesday, October 13th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again, and joined by a man, I used to call him the usual co-host of this program. I don't know if I can, historically, well, that's what we'll go with. Historically, he's the usual co-host of this program. He's been on for a couple things here and there, looking very much forward to having him back in action more. He was fantastic on last week's Horse Player Happy Hour. Oh, we'll put in a plug for that. Looks like we're going to have another qualifier tomorrow. $189 to win your BCBC seat over at horseplayers.com. And the whole thing is going to be live streamed this time. Four races from Keeneland, four from Belmont, starts at 3 with me and Matt Bernier. And maybe, just maybe, depending on his work schedule, the man I'm about to introduce, he hails from the planet Texas. But around here, we just call him the People's Champion. He's Jonathan Kitchen. What's up, JK?
PTF, I'm without a proper microphone. So
you're feeling a little insecure?
I mean, I like to have it there. I like to kind of mess with it, lean on it. But I'll just have to deal with these AirPods. So
you sound good. You sound good. I wouldn't have known. I mean, you don't sound like you're on your mega setup. But if you told me you had a decent USB mic, I would have believed you.
I guess I could start traveling with the that mic. It's not like the clunkiest of things. I mean, I'm obviously not going to bring that big arm bar looking thing.
No.
The rest of it.
I would get a travel mic is also a decent solution. You know, I have this little blue snowball, which is not by anyone's definition a great mic, but it's just so convenient. And I love the fact that like two people can even talk into it when you're on the road. So I just like pack this thing with me. Anyway, the things about podcasting you didn't need to know, people. The worst part though is when I forget to plug it in, I'll go back and listen to shows sometimes and it's just like, oh boy, that's the native mic on the Mac. And that just typically doesn't work for me, but it sounded good for you.
I appreciate that, Pete. I really do.
What's been going on with you? What do the listeners need to know? I mean, obviously they've been seeing you doing a great job on the America's Day at the Races broadcast. What else is up with you? How's the betting life been?
Yeah, everything's been good. Everything's been good. It's been nice to be able to get up to New York a little bit, and hang out and be able to do some of the shows there. I'll be at home this weekend. It's Austin's kind of birthday weekend. So I'll be at home this weekend. And then the following weekend, I'll be back. Haven't really planned what I'm going to do Thanksgiving. I think I'll, you know, so yeah, it's a lot. It's been a lot of shows. It's been fun. Always a fun crew. Racing's been good at Belmont. A little bit sad, to be fair, that I'm, you know, this is going to be a first time, long time not getting to Keeneland for at least one day for their meet since at least 2015. I just don't know when I'm going to be able to do it. I thought about maybe trying to sneak in a Wednesday somewhere along the lines in between travel, but I think I'm going to miss the fall meet, so kind of stinks a little bit.
That's a bummer. You will be out for the Breeders' Cup, though, for out at Del Mar. Okay. Just check.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Okay. I get to the West Coast like Monday, a little Vegas Monday, a little LA Tuesday, and then driving down on Wednesday. I try to rent like a Ferrari or something, but I feel like I might kill myself on the way down there.
Don't do that. Your company insurance doesn't cover Ferrari crashes. Drew made that very, very specific when he outlined things. Let's talk about the Breeders' Cup. That's the stated purpose of the show today. Nick Tamaro and I, the last 3 weeks, we've given a bunch of thoughts, but you know, we want to hear where you stand on a lot of this stuff. And we'll just go through races, and the more, you know, the more you want to stick your neck out there, as I know you're wont to do sometimes, the better off it is. We don't need you. You know, I'm known for sometimes in these situations, a few weeks out, I got 1 foot on the boat, 1 foot on the dock. We want you to be as bold as possible in your way too early Breeders' Cup prediction.
I'm going to pick winners.
Okay. All right.
But,
well,
I'll pick winners, but with the caveat of, I don't give a damn. I'm going to probably change my mind.
Well, that's fair. It's weeks out. That's why it's the way too early prediction.
Yeah, you can't, it was today.
You know, the week
it was
of
today.
The Breeders' Cup, you can't do that. But,
yeah,
but
of course,
you know, several weeks out, it's to be expected. Let's
actually can do that the week of, because the morning of last year's Breeders' Cup Saturday, went to Chick-fil-A to pick up some food. I told the story before, and I was not going to use glass slippers. Euros can't win the turf sprint. Wasn't going to use them. The line was so long at Chick-fil-A, I was bored. I called Sean Borman, who's no stranger to these airwaves, and he convinced me that he liked the horse. So you can change your mind all the way up until the drive-thru at Chick-fil-A.
I think that's absolutely fair when it comes to like including a horse in a spread race. But like, you can't come on here and tell me Nick's Go can't lose and then tell me the week of, unless there's some dramatic new piece of information that the horse is going to get in a pace duel and lose. And right. Maybe this is a good place to start, because Nick's Go is a horse that I know you've had a line on, you've had strong opinions about throughout the season. What's going to win the Breeders' Cup Classic?
You know, I think there's a couple of conversations that you have to have about the race. I think there's a handful of horses that can win or a handful of horses that can't win. The handful that can, I think, are horses like Nick's Go, Central Quality, Hot Rod Charlie. And then if you wanted to get really kind of cute and creative, possibly an Art Collector, right? Now, here are the problems and that I see with the race is that for the longest time before Hot Rod Charlie and Art Collector kind of turned into Hot Rod Charlie and Art Collector that they will be come the first Saturday in November, Nick's Go appeared to be loose, and he appeared to be loose for a long time, right? Like 8th pole, 16th pole loose. The problem is with horses like Hot Rod Charlie and Art Collector, I'm a little bit concerned that they're going to run at Nick's Go around the 3/8, which is, you know, new to the game, midway on the turn. And if that happens, it could set up for a horse like a Central Quality to come running late. Look, I don't think Hot Rod Charlie or Art Collector will win if Nick's Go shows up. But I do also think you have to take into account some of the things we heard this summer from Louis Saez and from Brad Cox about Essential Quality, saying that he's one of the smartest horses they've ever been around, and that he knows where the wire is and he does just enough. That's why he's such a kind of average workhorse in the morning. If you believe that, which I know most of you are rolling your eyes, and that's fine. If you believe that, then there's the argument that Essential Quality will run to his competition, and he will potentially have a nice little setup with Nick's Go getting run at by one of those other two types of speed types. I think the way that I'm going to probably play this race, the way that I'll probably lean, is I'd like to see who shows up for the turf, maybe play some big doubles like I did last year in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. I want to be alive to Brad Cox. I want to be alive to Nick's Go, and I want to be alive to Essential Quality, because if Nick's Go gets loose, he's going to win. If he gets run at, I think it sets up for a horse like Essential Quality. I'm going to try to – my pick in the Classic is Brad Cox.
And you and the market are in complete alignment, my friend, right now. Nick's Go 7-2, Essential Quality 9-2, Hot Rod Charlie 10-1, at double-digit odds, I do think about him. Two other horses I wanted to ask you about. Oh, I will mention Art Collector 14-1, because you had mentioned him. Two other horses in the betting – 10-1, Max Player, who I want to get your thought on, and Medina Spirit, who I know you're not a huge fan of, but I will say that Medina Spirit's presence in the race does make me feel like your essential quality scenario. You know, if it becomes Nixco dealing with Medina Spirit, as long as he can go with him, which, you know, Nixco is faster than Medina Spirit early, but Medina Spirit is a tough dude. And if he gets softened up just a little and then gets that other run at the 3-ace, I do think essential quality or some horse that maybe, you know, maybe Hot Rod Charlie can trip out and come get him. I think that scenario gets very interesting. But I am curious to see if you think Max Player or Medina Spirit can either A, win, or B, pace factor.
Yeah, I mean, the pace is going to definitely be an issue. I mean, Bob Baffert has never really been one that rates a horse that has early speed. But typically, he's in spots where he has the fastest horse early. I just don't see him going out there and just telling Johnny, I don't care, make the front. And I don't see Hot Rod Charlie and their connections with Doug O'Neill saying, I don't care, make the front. Because you know what you're going to get from Nixco. You look at his past performances. He never rates since switching to Brad Cox. In fact, in every race he's won, he's never been second at any point of the race. So you know he's going. That's his game plan. That's what he's going to do. And so I still feel like he'll get loose. And I feel like everyone else's game plan will be to sit off of him. Baffert's game plan, break away from there, keep him close, stay off of him. Same with Hot Rod Charlie. And I would assume the same with Art Collector. So there's still a world in which he gets run at. That he gets loose. I just worry about what's going to happen late in the race, the 3-8 pole. When he has to run a little bit earlier, he doesn't get that extra little breather. What's going to happen there?
It's going to be a great question to see it play out on the track. Now, we don't need to go through all these races, because especially where we don't know who's showing up, a race like the Breeders' Cup Turf, but it's almost pointless to talk about this far out with some, you know, Euro potential superstars joining us, but we don't know. I guess I'll ask it this way. Have you seen anything from any of the American turf runners that makes you think you're going to want to leave them in the mix, no matter who shows up from across the ocean?
I mean, the only one I feel like I really need, you know, this could be another situation where I could see myself hopefully being in a position where I could play a couple big doubles with Tarnawa and Domestic Spending. And here we go. Gufo, I don't need, I don't need Japan. Mishriff's interesting. You know, obviously you don't want to knock a horse like that. He's shown some toughness to be able to win big races on dirt and on turf. I guess the only other horse I think that could maybe be a little bit cute and interesting is a horse like Trebuven, who could potentially get loose in there. Likely won't have to deal with a horse like Channel Maker. But to me, it's like a Tarnawa Domestic Spending type of situation are the only two I really need. I think Domestic Spending is a real deal. He's a really talented racehorse, and I think he's one of those examples of us being on the tail or on the, you know, a week away from the Tattersall sale. Is like these Europeans used to dominate these races when they were racing against Bernardinis and Medaglia d'Oros and whatever that's not the same situation anymore. Now they're running against pedigrees from over there with a guy in Chad Brown who clearly understands how to train a turf horse. So that's kind of my initial lean. You know, I'll obviously listen to what we hear from overseas about horses like Mishriff and Tarnawa and how they're running and how they're coming into it. Obviously, Tarnawa ran well in the Arc to get beat there on testing ground. So, and she obviously likes a firmer surface, and she showed that last year here in America. So those are basically the only two I'll probably need. No Gufo, no Japan, nothing like that.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't be leaving out Mishriff should he come over and choose that engagement, which is the rumor that it sounds like he would go there. Of course, it'd be super fun to see him line up in that already very interesting classic we talked about before.
He's going to run at Ascot next week, right? So he'll be coming back quickly?
Correct. And it's not even next week. It's this weekend. So there's 3 weeks this year between Champions Day and the Breeders' Cup. So it's entirely possible he could do the double. We've seen, you know, we saw Found and Magical when it was just 2 weeks come back and run huge. So
those were both anything's possible. Trained, right?
Correct.
Has John Gosden done the quick turnaround to the Breeders' Cup with success before?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. And if there's a listener out there who follows this stuff closely and wants to correct me on that, please do. But there's also the possibility they'll just say, hey, we're going to wait. And they've got that sick bonus to go to Japan. So I think it's quite likely Mishra isn't going to come. But I'm just saying, if he does, I wouldn't be counting him out. I did want to follow up with you a little bit more on domestic spending. One thought I had was that the race and the Mr. D might maybe set him up to be a better price than he should be in this spot. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you about him, I think people are going to question the mile and a half for him simply because he hasn't run that far. But on his breeding, that certainly suggests to me he should be able to handle it. How confident are you that domestic spending will get the distance? And do you think he could maybe be a little bit of sneaky value if we get three interesting Europeans in the race?
No, I mean, I don't question the breeding. I mean, I don't know if this number is completely accurate, but it seems like the dam's foals have an average winning distance of 8.5 furlongs. That's pretty far, for an average winning distance. You know, look, he's not a maniac. He's not a puller type. He'll be fit, I think, leading into the race. That's not the reason that I'll be nervous about him getting beat. It won't have anything to do with the distance. He's handled a mile and a quarter well enough on a firm turf course at Del Mar. You know, it feels like a mile and a half will be well within his reach.
We can do a little speed round on some of the other turf situations. Again, we won't go too deep, not knowing exactly who's going to show up. How big of a Warlike Goddess fan are you at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got myself into some trouble with this. I flippantly said on the show that she could be the shortest price horse in the race. I completely, like, I was just a stupid, wrong thing to say. I like her a lot. I think she'll be very short. I think she's really damn good. I don't know a lot about horses like Love and Mother Earth and whatever this is, Rogier, Adaria. She's not going to come, is she?
No, Adaria, I thought they were talking about potentially making a return tilt. Though okay. In the betting being as high as 8-1 suggests that maybe there is some doubt. You might be right about that.
Zero. I mean, I have zero interest in any other runner from the U.S. I just think that Warlike Goddess is just really, really good. And my sister Nat is no world beater, but the way that she came back and won that race, I think just kind of that won the way up. You know, the figure wasn't particularly fast. The way she won, it makes Warlike Goddess running by her like she was tied to the fence just a little bit better. I just like fair. The way Warlike Goddess does it. I haven't really seen them have to get to the bottom of her. Her speed figures are fast. You know, it's just going to be one of those situations on like what does Aiden bring and what do the Euros bring, because obviously that could be a little bit problematic for her because it's not like it's the toughest division here. I do think she's a likely winner though.
Sounds like she's going to be all over your tickets.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I would probably do, I probably envision doing in this situation is having her prominent and then trying to really gather some information about these Euros off of trips, off of, you know, I know, you always have some really sharp people on to talk about how well they think they, you know, how good they think they are, how well they're doing, if they're going to appreciate the firm ground and the tight turns at Del Mar. Like that's the kind of, if there's one of them, that's like, I hear Nick Luck or Dove or whoever say they're going to love those tight turns. They're going to love this, that, and the other, the firm ground. And then it's the type of horse, maybe I'll upgrade and include, but, at this point, I don't have enough information about those Euros.
Yeah, of course not. We'll loop back as we get closer to it. There'll be clues in terms of how they ship. And you're absolutely right. We're going to have a ton of coverage. Looks like there'll be a special pod late week. Naomi Tucker's going to be involved. Hopefully Alex Sossville will be involved. Sounds like Michael Adolfson's going to be involved going over the Champions Day. Probably worth paying close attention, especially with the 3-week distance between Champions Day at Ascot and the Breeders' Cup this year to what happens on those shores. And we're going to have you covered up and down with free content and content on the plus side for the Euro. So folks will have a chance. And then, of course, we'll get to be doing our final answers come that week when I can really hold your feet to the fire on this. Here's another sprint horse I want to get your thoughts on. We got to see in action this weekend, Golden Pal. Will he win the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint?
I love the horse. But if I'm looking right now to make sure, I mean, what was his buyer? Like, it was like an, wasn't it like a 90 or an 80 or something?
It was low. 90? It was, yeah, it came back lower than I thought it was going to. I think it was high 80s.
Yeah, they're going to bet this horse. It's Wesley Ward. It's a turf sprint. The horse has had some superstar moments, but he's just not that fast. He's not a horse that, like, I can see myself tossing just because he's kind of showed so much talent. I like the way that he kind of re-rallied and ran the other day after getting headed, but he is a horse that I absolutely will not lean on. You know, a horse like Gear Jockey is a horse. Some of those West Coast turf sprinters that show up here that are horses that I'll consider. And then I was hopeful that what's her name would still show up. I don't even see her listed around here. Would you say Carabelle? I don't even see her listed anymore.
Okay.
She might be a no go, but I still think she's got some back races that make her interesting. So I'll try to beat Golden Pal to a certain extent, but he's just
more of a defensive use.
If it makes sense, but this race is usually not in any major sequences. You know, it's usually a little bit earlier. You know, it's usually like right after the Philly Amare sprint, or like it's sometimes even the first Breeders' Cup race on Saturday. So it's not going to be in the pick six. So I don't have to deal with it in that regard. Hopefully none of my strong opinions are connected to it. As you know, I like to play doubles.
Let's talk about the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. I'm sensing we're going to get a bold prediction from you here. Let's see.
Yeah, I love Life Is Good. I mean, if he runs now, they can't do that. They can't do what they did last time and rate him. I think that was just circumstantial. But I'm just saying that as a you know, if they do that, that's not an ideal situation. But I mean, to me, Silver State doesn't want anything to do with this horse. Life Is Good. You know, someone said to me the other day, and I don't know if this is 100% true or not. But I think Maggie said it. Every horse out of the Jerkins has come back and won. I think that's true. Every horse that ran in the Jerkins has come back and won.
That's amazing.
I don't know. I guess Jackie's Warrior, Following C, Life Is Good, and then whoever was behind them. I don't have it in my brain at the moment, but
I'll look it up.
Yeah, I think five of the five. The race was August 28th, race 9. If you're looking where I think you are, August 28th, race 9. But yeah, so I love Life Is Good. I like this little comeback race, the little prep that he had in that one turn mile. I think he's the type of horse that can do exactly what Nixco did last year. Go, and then go faster if you don't think you're going fast enough. And just if they run you down, they run you down. But take a page out of Golden Sense's book. Take a page out of you know, I want to say Tapiture maybe was even aggressive like that, if I'm not mistaken. I'm looking.
Yeah.
When he won the – no, he came from out of it. Oh. He ran second, so maybe that wasn't the right one. But Golden Sense and Nixco, ride him like that.
You make me realize I had a host fail on the other show that I actually recorded the same day. It dropped yesterday, if you're listening to this, the day that this Breeders' Cup show drops. But I totally forgot to talk with Nick Tamaro about Following C and his victorious return to the races, which I do tend to think, to bring it back to Breeders' Cup, the most significant thing about was the form boost that it gives Jackie's Warrior and Life Is Good, because this is a horse who wanted no part of those monsters.
No.
And you know, and meanwhile,
they were eight still clear.
Still good enough to post 100 and win a graded stake the next time out.
Yeah, they were eight clear of him.
They've all won, by the way. It is almost the perfect old school Steve Davidowitz key race. Jackie's Warrior improving to a 110 and winning in the next start. Life Is Good. The number went down, but there might be, and that's worth pausing on, how much it bothers you to see the 106 go down to the 99 on the buyer scale. Following C improved from an 89 to 101. New Bomb improved from a 50 to an 89 and won his next start, which was in that allowance race at Belmont the other day, but not a bad bounce back from fifth being beaten 29. And then Judge and Jury improved the figure nearly 40 points, also bouncing back nicely to win an allowance race. I mean, this is a key race in every sense of the word, and it might yet produce two Breeders' Cup wins. But come back to that Life Is Good point.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. The horse was 1-9 in that race. There was no one in there that could even get close to him. He was ridden very confidently and comfortably. He wasn't even ridden or persevered through all, you know, whatever. I don't think the pace was particularly quick. I could care less about that as a prep. He'll be fine. He'll be ready to go. The other thing I wanted to say about following C is, you know, it is – well, there's a couple things. First thing about following C is that, you know, he's going to have to find a new rider, obviously, because Joel rode him last time. Joel obviously won't be riding him in the sprint because he'll be riding Jackie, who will be a big favorite in my opinion. And the other thing I wanted to say is I was looking for that other dirt mile winner that would you know, needs to be the playbook for Life is Good. Spun to Run, Golden Sense, and Nick's Go.
Yes.
As fast as you can go.
Just go out there and bottom them out. Looking at prices for that race, I mean, I think the 5-2 on Life is Good is a good number. I know you're not always a big fan of the buy, sell, hold game, but I mean, if I made you buy, sell, or hold that, what would you do?
If I had $17,000 on my BCBC car and he was 5-2, I'd bet it all.
Yeah, well, I think that tells you a whole lot when it comes to the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. We touched on the turf already, the filly and mare turf. How about the distaff? This brings us to action from this weekend too. Latruska, I had the president of her fan club on earlier with Nick Tamaro. He makes a pretty compelling case that even if there is a ton of speed, even if there are Bob Baffert team tactics, she might still be able to shrug them all off and win. How impressed are you with her?
You know, we've been lucky enough to see, you know, Rachel and Zenyatta and Royal Delta and Midnight Bisou and Monomoy Girl.
Beholder's about to cross you off the holiday card list.
I was coming. Beholder, Songbird. You know, we've got to see these like great mares do really cool things, and like Latruska's year is one of the best years I've seen. For a filly that or a mare that didn't really do some of the things that Rachel did, like going against the boys and stuff, but like winning the Apple Blossom, the Ogden Phipps, the Florida Lee, the Personal Ensign, the Judmont Spinster, and all of those at different racetracks, all of them wire to wire, except for the Apple Blossom, where she got headed by a horse that barely has lost twice in her career. She is super special, and Andy said it on the show. I don't care what happens in the Breeders' Cup. The Eclipse Award needs to be engraved right now. Get it out of the way. She needs to be the champion for what she did this year, regardless what happens at Del Mar. But I do think she'll be hard to beat.
That's how I'd vote it, too, because I do think we talk all the time about horse players voting with dollars. Well, you know, industry people who love the sport, and you see the way that she was campaigned, that should be rewarded. It shouldn't all come down to, you know, and I'm not thinking of any specific horse here, but, you know, running three times, but then you get the Breeders' Cup win. Like, that's awesome. I'm not judging anybody who does that, but giving extra credit for the horse that was campaigned the way that Latruska was campaigned, I'm actually totally down with that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I just don't – to me, She Dares the Devil has a, you know, is a forward type. She's not running past Latruska late. She's – and to be fair – you know, she's kind of been dodging her a majority of the year. She beat her earlier in the year, but that's...
She did not, beat her.
Yeah, but the circumstance... she's not the same horse. Latruska's not. In my opinion.
Malathot... You think she's just much better now?
Yeah, Latruska. Malathot just doesn't seem fast enough, and I think Malathot's probably better going a mile and a quarter. I mean, I would never do this, but I would never recommend doing this, so everyone calm down, but I think Malathot actually has a better chance of winning the Classic with a meltdown than she does this race going a mile and an eighth. She just feels like a mile and a quarter type.
That's interesting. It's not crazy.
Funny South can't beat her. Royal Flag can't beat her. Clarier can't beat her. Private Mission, Horologist, as time goes by, can't beat her, can't beat her, can't beat her. I mean, if someone beats her, I can't tell you who it's going to be. It's going to be some kind of chaotic situation. Like, I don't know. I guess they have Bonnie South, maybe Royal Flag if it falls apart.
Yeah, I could see Bonnie South, Royal Flag, and even Malathot if they go fast enough. And I'm not saying I think this is going to happen, but if something unexpected and, you know, if there's a Baffert tag team situation and and private mission and somebody else decides to all show speed early and it just melts down. I mean, that's, we talk about it all the time. That's how slower horses beat faster horses, and it's horse racing. So that can happen, but it's hard for me to want to invest too much of my money in that scenario against her. I probably will maybe do a little. I think maybe I like Malathon more than you, but I'm also just concerned that the public likes her more than me. So I don't know where that leaves me with Malathon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned Private Mission. I guess she's the kind of the fly in the ointment. If she is fast enough, if she wants to hook Latruska, it's one of those deals though. If she hooks Latruska, she's not going to win because Latruska is not quitting. You're not going to put her away at the 16th pole and take a deep breath and finish the race. You're going to fight her all the way to the wire. She's proven that. And to me, that feels like it could potentially set up for somebody else. It's interesting, man. The two big dirt races, the Classic and the Distaff, have legit, real, we know for sure, speed. So if you love a closer in one of those two races, you're going to get what you need. It's not like these other situations where you're like, ah, geez, I just hope they go fast enough to set up for this plotty horse that I like.
Bonnie South is an interesting Latruska exacta partner in there, though. I think the idea that Latruska, you know, takes down the other speed and goes on with it. I do, you know, we'll have to look at a lot more data, but just the idea that she could be an overlaid price and come run, because she doesn't just pass tired horses, she runs through the stretch and you know, maybe gets that good setup to come second with her. There's my prediction. That's her exacta.
There you go.
We'll skip the mile entirely because we have no idea who's coming over from Europe, and it's quite possible that the first five choices will be foreign. Breeders' Cup Sprint.
It's funny, I'm glad we did that, because honestly, I'm just being honest. That race is probably the race that I am every year. I have the least opinion on, and a race where I typically just take guidance from people who know more in that arena than I do, and just kind of roll with whatever direction they kind of send me in.
Here's one that you will have an opinion on. How good is Mo Forza, and is he a serious contender in this race?
I mean, I've just never been a Mo Forza fan, but golly, he always shows up and runs.
He's good.
Yeah, and he likes it at Del Mar. I mean, I don't know. I don't know anything about Palace Pier, Space Blues, Poetic Flair. I don't know anything about those horses. I know Order of Australia didn't run particularly well.
That's an understatement.
So, I mean, sure, Mo Forza can win. He's got fast numbers, but I'm not cutting a line to try to, you know, beat these European horses trained by John Gosden and Charlie Appleby. No offense, Peter Miller, but, you know, I just – Doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
One idea on Mo Forza is there could be an interesting arbitrage situation in that the European books will give this horse no respect. 14-1 now. I could see it being higher on the day. So if you get these superstars over here, I think Mo Forza will probably be overbet in the USA pool. I don't know about overbet, but he'll be bet less. He'll be bet more, rather. He'll be a lower price in the tote that he will be with the books. And you might see a weird situation like, you know, Tarnawa last year. Keep this in mind when you're looking at these pools, if you have the ability to get down in both places. I mean, didn't Tarnawa, who was, you know, Dove and I were like thrilled to get 7-2, and didn't she end up going off 9-2 in on the tote or something overlaid as a result of weird pool stuff? And I'm going to give myself a host fail if I don't point out that when I say Dove, I'm of course talking about Rob Dove, one of the top 10 pro punters in the UK today.
She was 9-2.
Yeah. And I mean, that was not available internationally. That was like stealing compared to what, you know, what was going on over there. So just something to look at in all that. That's a note for really any race that has European participation. If you have the ability, and the tote pools are pretty stable too. So you don't, you know, it's not just like Thursday at Aqueduct where, you know, you don't, you know, I'm not trying to pick on Aqueduct, but any USA pool where you don't typically day in, day out, know what kind of price you're going to get. You can get a little cheekier. You know, you'll see market moves, but you can get a little cheekier on Breeders' Cup Day. You have tipped your hand, I think, about the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Are they beating Jackie's Warrior?
I don't. I mean, you know, like I said, we're weeks out. See how he handles the racetrack. One of the things I will keep in of all my dirt conversation, one thing I will say is one of these big horses is not going to like the loose track at Del Mar. Whether it's Knicks Go, whether it's Letruska, whether it's Jackie's Warrior, whether it's Life is Good, good luck trying to figure out which one it is. But one of them is not going to show up because they're not going to like the loose track at Del Mar. So that's the only thing that I think can beat Jackie's Warrior. You know, look, I hope baby Yoda still shows up. I hope he does off of that effort. You know, he missed the break. I'm a believer in speed figures. And, you know, maybe with an outside draw, this horse will be 12-1, and I think will be very interesting. But, you know, I don't need Special Reserve. I don't need Dr. Scheivel. Firenze Fire is interesting underneath. I don't need CZ Rocket, Flagstaff. To me, it's Jackie can show up and handle the surface. I think he'll be out there early enough. We'll have some insight on how he's training. I think Baby Yoda is interesting if he actually shows up. If he can somehow get into the race. Doesn't seem like it'll oversubscribe. It feels like he probably could. But Jackie is it hasn't even been close how good he's been.
With following C, do you see – I'm taking that figure pretty literally, and it's suggesting to me that he still has a ton to find. If that figure were a few points faster, could you make a case that he's a – developing three-year-old doing what he wants to do now and that he could at least have a chance to run in the number in a race like the Breeders' Cup Sprint? Where do you stand on him?
Yeah, I do. I do think he could. I do think he could. I think he's got room to improve, you know, but he's going to have to improve and the other one's going to kind of need to not show up. You know, I mean, it's kind of how it feels to me. It doesn't feel like he's going to be able to make that jump. And if Jackie runs a Jackie race, that he's going to be able to beat him. I'm not against the notion that he could improve.
You were talking before about a comment you made about the shortest price favorite on the day. According to the bookies right now, that's going to be Gamine in the Filly and Mare Sprint. I have made the case to be moderately against her, just given how short she's going to be. I think she'll be shorter than that in the tote pools on the day, quite possibly. And I'm a big Bella Sophia fan, and I think she's interesting to maybe take her on as a 3-1, 7-2 alternative. One book, that's an outlier, so don't get too excited about these prices, but hunt around for it if you can. One book has Bella Sophia at 8 right now, which I would bet unreservedly. Yeah. But what do you think about when you said really? Do you mean really? Really, you think? Were you saying that you don't think she's going to be that short, or you think I'm nuts to oppose her?
No, I don't. No, I don't think she deserves to be the shortest price favorite. I mean, she wins. You know, she always shows up. She wins, but she's not like out here running these numbers that these other horses can't compete with. I think Bella Sophia is interesting as an alternative. I think Cece is interesting as an alternative. I think those kind of late running closers that are basically the same horse, Sconson, Bell's the One. I think they're kind of interesting if it heats up. Remember, this race produces a ton of bombs.
Yeah.
Bar of Gold and the Mark Cassie runner that I never can remember that Irad won on at Churchill.
I'll dig that for you in a second.
Canadian horse. I always do that. I can't remember that. I never remember that horse's name ever.
It could be a suggestion for a future tattoo, maybe.
Oh, no shot. what was the horse's name? I'm a Breeders' Cup Filly. People at home.
They're accusing me of host fails. And
I hear you. I hear you screaming. It was. Oh, this doesn't show results. That is challenging. Races. Where are we going here?
Oh my God! If this gets any worse, I'm going to have to edit, and I really don't want to edit. So help us out. Help us out here.
Shamrock Rose.
Yes. Sorry, Shamrock Rose. Sorry, Mark Cassie.
You make
a good point.
But the reason but
weren't
I think
those meltdowns? Happened. Weren't those meltdowns? And do you think this is gonna? I mean, I guess this is why these are way too early predictions. It's from here. I'm not seeing it as a meltdown, but maybe when we have past performances in front of us, it'll look a little bit different. And maybe my idea that this horse is going to be shorter than 4-5 starts to look silly at that point. But just the names I'm seeing on the odds board and the prices I'm seeing, yeah, I'm in agreement with the odds makers about.
Here's why
the short
I think
price.
This race has meltdowns all the time is because It's at 7 furlongs. You know, a lot of these horses have developed their, you know, have spent time going six, going 6.5, and now they're going 7. And I think that you can get a horse maybe like Bella Sophia, who's going to hook Gamin, where Gamin doesn't typically get hooked, and it could set up for others. So, yeah,
I mean, I'd like to see it as from a gambling point of view. I'd like to see it. I've been half and half with Gamin. There's been some days where we rode together into the sunset, and there's been some days where she stuffed me in the locker. We'll see what it ends up being in here. Any other thoughts on this one before we turn the page?
No, you can roll.
All right, let's do it. All right, so we talked about that. Breeders' Cup Juvenile. We had talked about this race extensively with Nick Tamaro, the increasing of the buyer speed figure for Jack Christopher. I suppose there are some out there questioning whether or not the distance is truly going to be his friend as fields get tougher. I've got like three opinions in this race. I'll give my three opinions and you can tell me what you think. I think Jack Christopher is going to probably win the race. I don't think Corniche is going to run in the number, and I like Oviat Class to be the exact the partner for Jack Christopher, and I'll probably have a penny with Oviat Class on top. I thought that was good closing against the flow. I like the fact that this horse is listed at 33-1 in the betting. Will not be that on the day, I would not think. But am I making this too simple?
This is another situation where I could see an all in for me, because Jack's figure is fast, and faster than most. And the thing about Jack that I like a lot, that people, you know, we used to kind of debate about this back and forth. What does it mean to go two turns and one turn? You know, you and I, we used to talk about it all the time. I have a definitive answer of how I feel now. I don't know if it's right, but it's how I feel, and I make decisions accordingly. One turn races are more stamina driven, because you don't get to slow down going into the first turn. You don't. You have to slow down going into the first turn, going two turns, because if you don't, you're going to have problems with force.
Yes.
You can't go that fast. And it's such a long run on one lead when they're on the backside. To me, it's more of a stamina test. And the way that Jack Christopher handled that flat mile, burying one of the Saratoga superstars in My Prankster, he's not going to have a problem going a mile and a 16th, two turns. Now, when we get to next year, if you want to talk stamina for the mile and an eighth races, let's talk about it. But the mile and a 16th against these horses, based on how fast he is and what he did in the one turn mile at Belmont, I don't even want to have the conversation about is he going to handle the distance.
I like your confidence. One runner I should also mention that will be somewhere on tickets of mine, and not just because I don't want to get crossed off of Matt Bernier's Christmas card list, is Command Performance, who I do think is super duper interesting going forward. I'm not sure if these horses can beat Jack Christopher on the day, but I like the idea of them running in underneath. Do you have any other secondary opinions beyond being a big Jack Christopher fan in the BC Juvenile?
Let me just, I thought I had this. Let me pull this 2 seconds. Okay. Let's see. I like Jack, obviously, against Corniche, Classic Causeway. Oof. He was bad, wasn't he?
Yeah, it wasn't great. I mean, it was tough. It was a tough situation, but the race came back slow. You know, Nick was a bit more forgiving than I was about it when we talked on the other show, but I just think that, I just think that I don't want horses in that race in this race.
Yeah, look, I don't want to steal Matt's his idea, but I think Command Performance, is interesting. You know, as an underneath type, it's a Todd Pletcher horse on the dirt. The horse is going to continue to improve. He came running late in the Champagne. Distance is going to be a problem for him. One of it is going to be for a lot of these other horses. I could see him running on late to get a piece.
All right, there you go. It'll be. I'm really excited about the Juvenile.
You got to remember, if they changed Jack's figure, they had to change Commander Performances too. Command Performances, yes, as well.
Yes, so that's right. And you like Nick and I. Big. I mean, if you had to choose, if you're a fan of the process, not a fan of the process, I see people complaining about the changing of the figures all the time, and I don't understand it. When new information, better information comes to light, why wouldn't you want to incorporate that and have a better number?
Yeah, and the thing about that is that it wasn't It wasn't, oh, other horses are faster, we have to change this figure. It's, oh, we found out the final time was wrong.
Yes, great point.
And I'm good with both, by the way.
Yeah.
You know,
but the one is an absolute slam dunk. I mean, the final time being wrong is an absolute. I can't imagine the argument against that. And I can make you an argument that I don't believe in about being a little more literal than upgrading it based on it really now just looks wrong. I want the most up-to-date information available in my figures. And, you know, you and I are both people who bet frequently based on these things. So I don't know. I don't understand the uproar about it.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either. It's like, I feel stupid even arguing about it.
Let's talk about these juvenile turf races just for a minute. I mean, again, without knowing who's coming over, there isn't much point. I will say this. It almost doesn't matter who's coming over. There's going to be Annapolis and Portfolio Company on my tickets in the juvenile turf. I thought that was an exceptional race. I was had sand kicked in my face over the weekend by Averly Jane. Thought that she proved herself as going to be a horse who's going to take a lot of beating in that juvenile turf sprint. And I really have basically no opinion at this stage in the juvenile fillies turf. You got anything on this trifecta? I do know there's one horse in the juvenile fillies turf you're going to want to talk about.
I love a horse in the juvenile turf. And so you don't get mad at me. What I'm doing right now is I'm...
Yeah, you're not going to ask me who the so-and-so horse is and then force me into a host fail. You're actually looking it up ahead of time.
No, I don't want to do that. I'm just going to take my time and look up the horse because I just can't remember for some reason. But I do love the horse, and I'm almost there.
I can't imagine...
Slipstream that won the Futurity yesterday on Sunday, going 6 furlongs on the turf. And Christoph said before the race that if we win this one, we're going on to the mile, the turf, the mile race for the 2-year-olds. We're not running in the sprint. And the way that Joel rode this horse, taking this horse back to last, coming up the inside and finishing like got shot out of a cannon. I cannot wait for this horse to draw inside with Joel, save ground on the first turn, save ground on the second turn, and kick out and run by Annapolis. I really, really like this horse. I love the plan. I love the intention. I think this horse is going to really appreciate getting out to the West Coast on some firm ground with a nice ground-saving trip from our boy Joel Rosario. I like this horse a lot.
Couple of decent figures for sure. I agree with you. You love it when that's the plan stated before the race and not an audible call late. I'm so impressed with Annapolis and Portfolio Company that I might take a little bit more convincing, but I like the way you described the trip and I love your enthusiasm in that race. We got to talk about Kinchin. Is she going to go to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf? Is this a decision that is being made? What can you tell us about the filly named after the great Ralph Kinchin?
I don't know. It's weird because like I kind of informally had like a little conversation. I don't know what they're going to do. I'll probably just defer on what they decide they want to do. She hasn't run particularly fast numbers. She has been in some kind of funny paced races. I think it's fair to say. I think there's a good horse there. What I like to see her in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, I'd like to see her run in every damn race because it's fun to watch her run. But I trust that Bob and Chad will make the best decision for her to have a long and successful career. So whatever they decide to do, I'll just kind of defer to them on that one.
No, that's fair, man.
You know, she's a cool horse, and I'd like for her to continue to be that. And if Chad believes that she's got a chance, then I'm in. You know, I actually heard Chad say the other day, pretty funny, he said, I'm not like a lot of these other guys. I'm not really interested in just going there for the paddock passes. Like if I go to the Breeders' Cup, it's because I think I can win. And he wasn't talking about her specifically when he said that. He was just saying in general. So we'll see. Whatever they decide to do, we'll be happy. Like I said, there's a good horse in there somewhere.
No, that makes sense. I mean, we've seen an immense amount of talent. It is a big ask, and I think you're right in that case to defer, and you're in the right hands that you can be confident the right decision will be made. And I also know that if you had like a really strong opinion, politics be damned, you'd probably say it. I think that's a testament to what a difficult decision it is when you have one so talented. But then on the other hand, it could be too much too soon, and you gotta figure it out.
She is 1,000% better than her last race. You know, that's a tough situation when, you know, it was a paceless race. We've seen that from a handicapping standpoint a million times. She was closing into a slow pace, still a little bit green. Tyler said after the race, like, you know, once he kind of straightened her out, she didn't really know what to do when she got in the clear. And then he kind of got her going again and she started to run. So it's, you know, I think that's just kind of how it goes, you know.
I did have one question that's interesting about this race that Sean Tugel and I talked about the other day. Consumer spending. So consumer spending based on the fact that Chad Brown decided to send her down to the Salima at Laurel as opposed to staying in New York in the Miss Grillo, you would get the impression that maybe she was considered, you know, the third on the depth chart or whatever. But she did win that race well. And Sean Tugel made the point on Baby Talk that, you know, having looked at PPs of a lot of the Chad Brown horses who've done so well in this race, and there are a lot of them, they don't usually go that route. And I think the implication was that that he would maybe hold that against a runner like Consumer Spending in this spot. Do you care at all about that? Would you, if Consumer Spending shows up here, would you downgrade her a little bit for taking a less traditional path to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf than what Chad Brown has done in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very simple thing to evaluate. Like, Chad goes where he, you know, feels like he has the best chance to win. And I think the fact that he sent the horse to Laurel is an indicator of where he thinks her ceiling is. You know, you're not going to send the best one to Laurel and then keep the second best one for the Miss Grillo.
Yeah.
You know,
no, it's just logical.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, you know, it's Chad. It's a turf race. And it's a 2-year-old filly. So, you know, she can win.
Let the market be your guide is probably how I'd approach that. That would be one if you're seeing 14-1 or something. But because it's Chad Brown in that race, and depending on who else shows up, let's say she ends up being the lone Chad Brown runner or one of two, and she's 6-1. I'd probably say, you know what, I might have to take a little bit of a stand here and try to peg back some equity if there's some other runners that are interesting in the race. Quick thought on the juvenile turf sprint. Were you impressed with Averly Jane the other day? Are there any of these others that stand out to you?
I was very impressed with Averly Jane. I was not impressed. She just breaks so damn fast. I was not impressed with the winner of the race here. Bubble Rocks, I think, was the winner.
Bubble Rock, yes.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what the figure came back. Actually, I'm going to look it up real fast because that was my biggest thing. I think the fractions were all jacked up. So there was really no indication of what they did. Yeah, the figure, this horse keeps running the same figure. I just don't see this horse winning. Averly Jane will be out in front. They'll have to catch her. There'll be real pace for the Euros. Remember, it'll be a flat five, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, at Del Mar. So that's going to play right into Averly Jane's little hands.
Could be another favorite.
I'll root for Averly Jane and our friend Gatewood Bell.
Yeah, yeah.
He might have been my last guest on JK Plus One since I went on my temporary retirement.
That's an off-air question. Hopefully this is a retirement like when jockeys retire and they just come back 3 months later. That's what the audience is hoping. But that could be a production meeting outside the show.
The episode I can't wait for. I don't know when it'll be. Maybe around Christmas while everyone's traveling is when I'll do it. But this Chad Brown episode is going to be outstanding. He told me a story yesterday. And so people that are listening now, they'll get the other day he told me a story about at Belmont. He was showing me this building that when he first started, he used to sleep there. And I'm telling you, I wouldn't even want to go to the bathroom in there. And he said that's where he learned to sleep with his eyes open.
Oh my God.
I was like, what do you mean? Like, worried someone's going to break in and like, come, you know, he's like, no. It's like, if you turn the lights off, the cockroaches would come out. You could feel them crawling on you. But if you leave the light on, they don't come out.
Oh my God.
And I said, wow.
That is gross and amazing. That's going to be a great episode. Can't wait for that. Good. I like that idea. Christmas gift for the listeners or something. We'll figure. It'll be a Christmas gift for me. I can't wait to hear all that. We've got one race left to talk about on this show, and it's one of these where we used to play the game of how few words can you do a race in. This one, I think you might be able to do in two. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies.
The Juvenile Fillies. You know, no, this is not one of those races. I think this race is a little bit more interesting for a couple of reasons. One, I will obviously be rooting like hell for Hidden Connection and our friend Jake Ballas and Black Type Thoroughbreds. She's proven to be able to handle the two turns. She likes the two turns. I don't think they got to the bottom of her last time. It was her first time going long. She's lightly raced. I think Hidden Connection is very, very interesting as an alternative to Echo Zulu. Now, if Echo Zulu shows up, same idea with her with the Jack Christopher thing. I'm not worried about her getting the extra distance. Watch that race again. Look on YouTube the day she ran in the Frisette, and watch on America's Day at the Races, and watch the races if you hadn't seen it there, and watch Richie Migliori talk about the way that she just is so comfortable on the backside. They zoom in on her. She's just flicking her ears back and forth, and she's absolutely cruising. I just think there's a whole lot more to this filly. She's going to continue to improve under the care of Steve Asmussen. So to me, it's a two-horse race. I think it's Echo Zulu and Hidden Connection. I'm looking forward to watching both of them run. I don't need the winner of the Alcibiades. I don't need Juju's Map. I don't need the maiden that ran second for Chad. I just think it's those two horses.
I would tend to agree that I'm going to want to have both of them on my tickets. That's for sure. I got to look at Juju's Map some more. That was a pretty impressive race. It was more impressive than I was expecting. I was on the Monterey train in the Alcibiades, and Juju's Map just shrugged them off, and I thought ran in a very professional effort, and it doesn't have that much to find on figures. So I'm not sure I'm willing to rule her out just yet. It'll be interesting to see if the two turn experience ends up helping Hidden Connection. She certainly, if I were to make a case for Hidden Connection over Echo Zulu, the other thing I'd mention is that maybe she has a little bit more of a progressive profile being, and all I mean by that is being in just, she's just got the two runs, and maybe I can see another step forward in her. Whereas Echo Zulu, who's run a pretty similar number three times, she's awesome. I mean, and all she's done is win, and maybe people are going to think it's nuts to knock a horse for that. But I do think the fact that the figure hasn't come forward, and this is going to be presumably the toughest test yet, maybe that leaves her a little vulnerable to a run from one like Hidden Connection.
Yeah, you know, it's, and like we said, and one thing that I would remind people to keep in mind is that it's true. There's no getting around it. The racetracks on the West Coast, Santa Anita and Del Mar, have kind of become deeper, looser racetracks. And it happened right around 2.5-3 years ago when they started to have some issues with the racetracks out there. And I think that they kind of went with a deeper, safer. Whatever the argument is there, deeper, safer is where they went. I think the East Coast racetracks are a little bit tighter. So you're going to have these horses that have been running on the East Coast, running a Churchill, running a Belmont, Saratoga, Gulfstream, Keeneland, tighter racetracks, having these performances, then they're going to come to the West Coast and they're going to deal with a different racetrack. Some of them are going to like it, some of them are not. And so I think paying attention to the workouts is going to be very important this year on the dirt races to help identify which one of these horses are going to like it, which ones aren't.
That's a great point, and something else that we'll be covering here on the network. We haven't figured it all out yet, but I mean, we'll be out there every morning. We'll surely be talking about what we see and hear on the shows. Naomi Tucker is going to be there in the morning. Hopefully we can get some of her buy-in as well as we give you all the coverage you need of the Breeders' Cup. We've obviously been covering it all season long, but now that the key preps, I guess, other than the Jessamine are in and Champions Day, if that counts, are in the books, we thought it was time for these way too early Breeders' Cup predictions. And JK, you did not disappoint. Some great info from some strong opinions, some early thoughts on wagering strategy. Hopefully we'll get a chance to have you back in the fold pretty soon to yap about some more races. Maybe we'll make you handicap next time.
Whoop, there it is.
All right, good stuff. Thank you again to JK. Thank you to our friends at the Breeders' Cup for helping us sponsor this show and a ton of content we've had all year on the In the Money Media Network. Go over to horseplayers.com, sign up for that BCBC qualifier, $179. The entire house cut goes to aftercare. Watch this week as 20 remaining entries get winnowed down to 10. And then next week on Thursday, we're going to have our final table doing something a little different for these last two games. They're going to be Belmont and Keeneland. We'll do four races at each. We'll cover the whole thing in a live stream. JK, I don't know if you, are you working the next two Thursdays or can you maybe make a cameo?
This Thursday will be Austin's birthday. Next Thursday, I am not, I'll be traveling, working, okay. Traveling. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I'm not sure. I think we'll see. I got
to
look.
Maybe we'll get you on there for a pre-record or something. It would be nice to see your face one more time. It was great having you on there last week. Who else to thank? How about our founding partners, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation and 10 Strike Racing. TRF, you can support this walk Bill Duncliffe is doing this weekend. TRFinc.org/players is the link to donate. And if you want it specifically to be for Bill, there's a hyperlink in there to his page. And or when you donate through us, just say this is for Bill's walk for the horses. He's raised an impressive amount of money and we want to get him to his goal of $6,500 for 65 years on earth. Good stuff there. 10 Strike Racing. JK, he's always out there rooting for the purple and the black as well. Thanks most of all, though, to all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. Hit us up with your Breeders' Cup questions. He's at UT Big Hair. I'm at Looms Boldly. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.